Hello, America. This is the place for uncensored talk on everything that divides us as a nation. I'm Alan Jacoby, and welcome to The Great Divide. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Great Divide. I'm here with a very special guest. He is running for Congress in the 8th District, Pennsylvania, the Scranton area. He's a combat veteran, former police officer. He's a Purple Heart recipient. I'm sure you've seen his video. If you haven't, well, you had to have because it already played in the beginning of this episode. I want to introduce Teddy Daniels. Teddy Daniels, how are you? Thank you for being here.
Brother, I'm good. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Oh, my pleasure. So you, you came out with this unbelievable, you know, pro-America, kick-ass, love freedom campaign video. your helicopters and a 6x6 you had a 50 cals firing bombs. Yeah. I mean, it's great. Obviously, we know you're an America First candidate. We know that you're it seems you're anti-establishment, which, you know,
whatever gave you that idea,
bro. You know, so I can't get enough of that video. Everyone I talk to, I mean, I know that video, I don't know how long it took. Maybe, you know, I know that video broke a million views it's rapidly.
It's got several million.
Several million. Right now. So you were in the news, obviously, prior to this with there was your helmet cam in Afghanistan where you were shot. So I want to, before we get into your congressional run, which is amazing in itself, you've lived an unbelievable life. I mean, you've done it all, and I want to go through it. We know, from what I read and listening to other interviews you did, you joined the military late in life, but there was a lot that before that. So bring us through. Just tell us who Teddy Daniels is.
Wow. So, I actually graduated from Valley Forge Military Academy outside of Philadelphia. I was not one of the rich kids that went there. I went there for different reasons. And, but I was a great athlete. I was a state powerlifting champ. Was an All-American high school football. And from Valley Forge, I had numerous scholarship offers across the country to go play football. And I went and played at West Virginia University. I was a Mountaineer, was a starting offensive lineman there, and tore my shoulder up going into my junior year. So college football was done. It was it for me. And I wanted to be a cop, but in my area, you either have to get hired on with a big department and they put you through the police academy, or you put yourself through.
Okay.
So I took some time. I got a job. I was working flat roofing. I saved up the money to go through the police academy. I put myself through. And then at nights, while I was going through the academy, I bartended at a fire hall. So got it done, got out, became a cop. Did about 15 years as a cop. And I went active duty and joined the U.S. Army.
So, and I, because I thought it was a great story, and I want everyone to know it. You joined the military late. I mean, you did basically a full career in the police department.
And yes,
what made you decide to walk into the Army recruiter's office?
So I went to do it right after college, but I had a torn shoulder, and I actually wanted to go in the Marine Corps. And had a torn shoulder, went and saw a recruiter. With my shoulder, it was just going to be a no-go at that time. So I still had this bug in me. excuse me. At the point that I joined, we were coming up on 2, possibly 3 of the deadliest years that they had in Afghanistan. And hold on, my dog's running around hey, lay down. So, lay down.
I'm surprised my dog's not at my feet busting.
Sorry about that, brother.
No, come on, man.
It's You know, I you watch the news, you see the flag covered caskets coming back, and
yeah,
you know, I guess part of it was a midlife crisis, but the main thing was, here's something that I wanted to always do, but never had the opportunity yet to do it. So I walked into a Marine Corps recruiter, and the guy says, "How old are you?" I said, "I'm 35." And he goes, "Well, our cutoff's 27, but try next door. They'll take you." So I walk into the Army recruiter. I go in there. The two sergeants stand up, and they say, "Hey, how you doing, sir? Whose father are you?" And I'm like, "No, guys, I'm here to enlist." So they had the bus going that day to take the ASVAB test. I took the bus, came back. They had my scores, and they were like, "Listen, you could do anything you want to do in the military. You know, you want to be an investigator, you want to be a bomb tech, you want to work on electronics, you name it, you can do it." And I said, "Listen, I want to go infantry." And like, they looked at me like I was crazy. And they said, "You do realize what that is?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." And I said, "But, you know, I'm walking away from a truly rewarding career. This needs to mean something to me. I want it to be hard. I want it to be tough.
Sure.
I don't want to just go in and do it. I feel like I want to earn it." So that's what I ended up doing.
Like, you wanted to do something like it, like you've never done before.
Like, exactly. Like, and here's the thing. They were all trying to convince me to, "All right, listen, you could be an MP. You already got a background in that." And I said, "Why would I leave what I'm doing now to go do the same thing in the military?
Right.
I want to do the cool guy stuff that only the infantry guys get to do." And that's what I got to do.
Yeah, the stuff you can't do in your neighborhood. Like, I know people who enlisted when they were 18, 19 years old. They became NPs, whether it was in the Army or in the Navy, whatever it was. And then when they got out of the military, they took the civil service test, and they ended up being police departments and big major.
Exactly.
Police offices and big
brother,
major.
I'd already done that.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to do something different. And
you did it. You did it.
Yeah.
You not only did it, but that, you know, that midlife crisis that it might have been that you call it, you know, you ended up with some souvenirs inside your body when you went there. I mean, and that video is all over YouTube. And matter of fact, everyone watching and listening, at the end of the video at the end of this show, you're going to see that video. Take us through that. So you're in the military now. You're how many deployments did you do?
It was just one.
Just did the one deployment. Okay.
Yeah.
So you went, you know, and I understand, you know, you're a decorated combat veteran, and that experience in itself is life-changing. And what do you want to share with that? Like, what that experience?
I'll tell you what, the experience, brother, I could really get into the weeds on that whole experience.
Sure.
But I'll tell you this. I think that experience right there prepared me for anything that I would ever experience for the rest of my life. You know, it's that I knew that if I stopped moving that day on that mountain that I'd die. I knew if I stopped fighting that I would die. Now, the DCCC already has me in their crosshairs. I am 15 months out from a general election, and they're already trying to hit me.
Right.
But you know what, brother? Like, I fought for my life.
Yeah.
So nothing that these clowns try to do to me is going to break me, hurt me, or stop me. All it does is it puts fuel in the tank to keep fighting.
Yeah. Yeah. You're prepared for anything. And you're not just, you know, I said this before we were on, you know, you're a knock around guy, you know, you're a blue collar guy. You're a veteran. You're a police officer. You have a family, and you are the epitome of the American dream. You weren't born with a silver spoon in your mouth. You worked hard, and you were a business owner. You know, everything you've done, like you have small children, correct?
Yeah, I do. My youngest is 4. His name's Jack Daniels.
Jesus Christ. That's got to be the best name for a boy.
Brother, my wife. My wife's incredible. So
she let you do it. She let you name him
Jack
Daniels.
She let me do it, but not just that. Okay? my wife, like, there's a lot of guys out there that married way out of their league, okay? My wife is the woman that when we walk into a room together, you see people whispering, and I know what they're saying. They're like, what's she doing with this freaking guy? So, like, I did good. I did good. I love my family. And, you know, lay down. I'm at a point in my life right now, besides hanging out with my dog here.
Nothing wrong with that.
You know, finally at a point where I should be spending time with my family. I love to hunt. I'm going bear hunting in less than 2 weeks. I'm going down south. They got a special bear season opening up. You know, those are the things I'd like to do. But here I am back in the mix. You know?
Back in the mix doesn't describe it. Teddy, you are putting yourself out in the public eye. You are exposing yourself to the country, including your family and everything that's ever happened in your life, to come to the forefront, to go and in the hopes to fight for the country in a different way. Yeah. To fight for the country, to represent what it means to be American and living in America and our freedoms. You are putting yourself, spending a lot of money, shaking a lot of hands, raising a lot of money to go, and I'm going to call it, to me, a member of Congress, it is a thankless job in a sense, but you're looking to go dive into the swamp and fight these swamp trolls, and I call them swamp trolls. So, like,
they are.
I look at Congress. I'm in New York. I'm stuck in this blue bubble. I got the one moron, Chuck Schumer. We got the other moron, AOC. And I look at New York. It's that Democratic lost cause. And me, I look at candidates. I look at the big picture. I look at the Congress. Who's got the majority in the Senate? Who's got the majority in the House? We have this slim margin. And not just because I have a podcast. Even before this, I've always looked at the big picture. We want the majority. Well, who's running in Arizona? That's good. Who's running in Pennsylvania? That's good. I can't make a political contribution to anyone in New York because the GOP in my area is a joke.
It is
establishment. The Republican Party is weak. They don't have a backbone. Even our Republican leadership in the House, Kevin McCarthy, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I just don't believe he's good leadership. And that there are new people, there are new Republicans in there that I'm hoping see take the reins and really fight. And it's amazing for someone just to say, hey, you're a veteran. A combat wounded veteran, you already had a full career. You're not a spring chicken. You're not a politician.
What are you trying to say, old brother?
Well, I mean, you know, listen, we both have white beards. Maybe you have a few years on me, but
hey, I didn't have these till the last kid came. You know what I mean?
But you know, and you're doing it. That alone, I admire because.
Buddy, here's why. Okay, I love history. I've always loved history. And I love to read. I know I don't look much like the reading type, but I do love to read. And Thomas Paine, who wrote Common Sense, had a quote that said, "If trouble must come, let it come in my time, so my children may live in peace." I'm watching what's going on in the world. Even locally with the school districts and the mask mandates and all that other garbage, okay? And my wife and I had a conversation. And it was almost to the point that, you know, didn't the previous generation kind of let us down a little bit politically? They put a lot of these people in office.
Yeah.
And I don't want my son 10, 15 years from now to come to me and say, "Dad, how come nobody stood up and did anything?"
Right.
You know? And you look at the establishment GOP. How in the hell are we going to go fight the socialist Democrats if we can't even fix our own party? If half of our party is in bed with them. How are we going to do it? And how are we going to get it done? We're not going to be able to. And what happens is the establishment lures in people with committee assignments and big money PACs. Okay. You know what? And I forget what interview it was. They asked me, well, how do we know they're not going to do that to you? You know, the establishment is going to come down with their weight on top of you.
Right.
I don't care about big money PACs and I don't care about committee assignments.
Right.
I'm going down there to fight from the inside. So I pretty much just took away all power that they would have over me. And the NRCC has already tried to recruit three different candidates to run against me. And they're not doing it. So they can't find somebody to run against me because I'm loud, I have a big mouth, I speak my mind, and I'm not going to take any shit from them when I get down there.
And that, I love it. And that's what you need. And what you said before is, you know, the GOP, where they approach you, they want you to tell, all right, listen, there are some things you're going to have to do. There are things you're going to have to fulfill. You know, running for office is, even when you're elected, you spend a good portion of your time campaigning and raising money because it's all about money. They want you, and I'm sure they've tried. You know, they want, all right, Teddy, listen, you want to run for this. You really want it. They see you have a lot of support, but they want you to go kiss the ring. They Yep. want you to be an establishment puppet, and they don't want to break the stride, and that's what we have to do. I look at Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She is a truth bomb throwing just beast, and she's hated by, I'm going to say, a lot of the GOP, the current GOP in there, because she's not establishment. What they did to her and let her be stripped of her committees and didn't fight, and even Kevin McCarthy, he agreed with it and took a knee and cowered to the crypt keeper in the Capitol, Nancy Pelosi, and said, oh yeah, okay, well, she shouldn't have said those things. We won't allow her on committees. And this is my one big problem with the two parties. Well, my one problem, I have a lot of problems with the left. But here's what they do smart. They're not stupid. They have all these progressives, these psychos like AOC and Ilhan Omar and all those anti-American pieces of garbage. But the Democrat leadership listens to them.
Yes, they do.
Our problem in the GOP is our leadership, who thinks they know everything and can do everything on their own. They don't listen to the aggressive America First candidates who make members of Congress, rather, who make sense, like, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, or that there's a few others. Like I like Matt Gaetz. I'm going to bring up another name because I you and I agree on something. You mentioned it in another show. My buddies over there at Sergeant and the Samurai podcast.
Mm-hmm.
They brought up Madison Cawthorn.
Yeah,
and you had mentioned not a fan.
Not
well,
a
neither
fan.
Am I. Neither am I. And I want to be. I want to be. And I, part of me says I think he has potential, but young good looking guy. You know, unfortunate accident. He's in his wheelchair. I believe he's well spoken, but I don't believe that those words he's speaking are true to what his mission is in Congress. But I'm also chalking it up to maybe he's just young. I'm not going to say young and dumb. Maybe he's just young and inexperienced, and he's got that. He ran for election. He's, I think, the youngest member of Congress. He won. And maybe he's a little starstruck with himself, with the attention he's getting. He has made some speeches on the floor that I like, but I don't see him taking the charge or lead into doing anything. You know, I always say deeds are more important than words. You know,
I'll tell you this: I had a conversation with the chair of the Freedom Caucus, beginning of summer. And I asked him, I said, why is there such a discord from the Freedom Caucus and the rest of the Republican caucus in Congress? And the way he explained it to me was, there's two types of congressmen. The ones that are loved in D.C. but hated in their districts. And then you have the Freedom Caucus, which are hated in D.C., but then loved in their districts.
Makes sense.
The problem is everything has a price tag on it down there. And brother, let me tell you, if I stayed in the corporate world, I could have made a bunch of money. I'm sure. Not doing this for money. Doing this for my family. I'm doing it for my kids. I'm doing it for the kids and grandkids of my constituents out there, so they have a future to look forward to. And brother, and I've said this before, I'm one of the guys who just wanted to be left alone. I wanted to sit on my recliner, watch the news, go hunting, ride my motorcycle, take my little guy to the playground. That's what I wanted to do. But the left couldn't let enough be. They just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And I had a woman comment on something on my Twitter a while back. She said, "Where do all you Trumpers get indoctrinated?"
Yeah.
And my reply was this: you did this to me. You made this. You made this.
Yeah.
Because of you, I'm off the couch and I'm involved. Getting called a deplorable, a racist, a homophobe, a xenophobe, a dredge of society. Okay? Pushing their agenda down our throats. They created me. And you know what? And I told her, I said, "You made this monster. Now you're going to have to deal with it."
Yeah.
And I think it's that type of resolve which makes me a different type of candidate. I'm not going down there, you know, trying to fill my pockets or do what all these other guys do down there. I'm going down there because I've had enough. And my son deserves a future. And for somebody to go down there and carry a big stick and drop the hammer on them, and that's what needs to be done.
Absolutely. It's concerning. You know, I have a 9-year-old little girl, and I was the other day, I don't remember what I was watching, and I was just thinking, like, what's it gonna be like in 20 years? They're just trying to break down the generations politically. Mm-hmm. I mean, we get into the issues and on the things you're running for, but a big thing right now, education. Right now, the Biden administration wants to politicize the Department of Education and the school system, and he wants to give 2 years of free pre-K and 2 years of free community college. That is government-funded education, and everything government-funded is going to have a message. It already does the education system federally and by the state, which we're all battling with the indoctrination of our kids. So now they want to take these kids and 2 years of pre-K so they can completely indoctrinate and saturate their sponge-like minds to what they want them to know and to learn what history is, and then bring them through grade school, learning that America is a systemically racist place, that this country is based on racism, that racism is weaved into our founding documents, which the current ambassador of the UN said publicly.
Let me ask you a question on that. And again, you're saying the left's viewpoint, and here's how I respond to the left on that. If this country is so racist, why do we have so many different people from so many different cultures and backgrounds trying to come here?
Right.
If we're that racist of a country, why are people flooding our borders?
Exactly. And we are not a racist country. We are not this country was not formed based on racism. And the exploitation, see, the Democrats are famous for this. They like to exploit minorities, whether it's black, brown, indifferent. They've always done it. They historically do it. They're good at it. And they promise, they promise, they promise. Republicans are bad. They're bad. They don't want to see you succeed, which is nonsense. I mean, Donald Trump did more than for the African-American community, African-American colleges than maybe any president in United States history, with the exception of Abraham Lincoln. Oh, which, by the way, Abraham Lincoln is also called a racist because he didn't, you know, yeah, it's all disgusting, disgusting nonsense. God bless you.
Thank you. Excuse me.
So the issue comes with what are we, the public school system to me, the public school system is, I don't want to call it a lost cause yet, but it's almost there. I'll be honest with you. I just withdrew my kid from public school at the beginning of this year. She's going into fourth grade. And the reason why I did it is some things I saw popping up in the curriculum in New York, but also because of the mask mandates, which I'll get into you with a little bit, because I know you stood up in your community at rallies and I'm doing it in mine, and I'm getting attacked. I mean, I'm getting threatened. Like, people think they could do something to me because
Right over target, man. And right. You got to keep up the fight. You know, right. You're not going to catch flack unless you're over target.
Right. Exactly. So it's, and I don't mind. I don't mind the threats. Believe me, nobody could take anything from me. I'm self-made. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. My parents didn't own their house when I was growing up. I own two businesses because I built those. I did it. And I do this podcast, and I do this show because I have a voice, and I'm not looking to change people's minds and sit here and rant. I'm looking to give a different view on what's going on out there, and maybe people can form their own opinions. Like, let's take news media. That's what news media is supposed to be. News media is supposed to be give you the facts so we can make our own opinions based on the facts we're being told. Now you don't have news anchors anymore or news journalists. Now you have news actors. They're all activists, and objective journalism is dead. So they feed all these people through their idiot boxes on education and what they want you to hear, and then the bad things they want you to hear. And that is a huge problem. And they're doing it to the younger generations to just try and brainwash and indoctrinate. And then people like you, people like me, we're racist. Now we're domestic terrorists.
Oh, I know.
And we're in a cult. But these are the same people who advocate for murdering babies with the satanic cult that's an actual religion, and get upset if we don't call them by their pronouns. So I'm tired of the word hypocrisy. It's not it's just downright disgusting. It's just evil. It's evil. I feel
you're right. And think about this. The First Amendment, the freedom of speech in this country, also applies, you know, to the freedom of press. And the reason that was set up was so the little man could be a voice, could have a dissenting voice against his government.
Right.
That's what the role of the media was. And you look today, it's done a complete 180 to where now they are an arm of the Democrat Party. They are the propaganda arm of the Socialist Democrat Party in this country. And for the little man to have a voice, good luck. You're not going to have one unless you agree with what they say.
Yeah, and if you go against the narrative, you will be labeled and showcased as a bad guy who is just not, who shouldn't even be looked at as a decent human being. They will shame. They will heckle. They will do whatever they can. And that's another thing the Democrats are great at. Out of fear, because their policies suck, they will attempt to destroy and smear any of their opponents. They're doing it to you because they're scared, not because they have better policies that they want to bring. You know, they don't care about election integrity.
No,
they don't want election integrity. I mean, they love that, you know, the irregularities, as we have to call them, otherwise, you know, we get banned. But I know, as part of some of your issues, you're big on election integrity, which I don't understand why anyone would talk bad about election integrity. Don't we want to know that our votes count and that our elections are fair, free and fair elections?
And here's the thing, and here's what the media isn't telling people. Remember in 2016 when Hillary Clinton went on the election was stolen tour? Remember the big Russian collusion investigation that was done? okay? Like, now they're like, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. It's the big lie. It's not a big lie. It actually did happen. There was an article that just came out today that Pennsylvania had 470,000 mail-in ballots that had no legitimate address or are missing. So how is that a lie? You know, wouldn't people on both parties want to get to the bottom of this and find out what's truly going on? And let's put this to bed for once and all and get it over with. Right. You know, that way, you know, both parties work together. We find out what the issues are. We find out what happened. And then I don't want to hear another freaking word for the next 100 years. The election was stolen. We looked into it. This is what we found. This is what we didn't find. Here's the results. But the problem is the liberals aren't mature enough to do that. They just want to start slinging names and accusations and trying to destroy people.
Right. And obviously we know deep down, and any rational human, any rational thinking human would know that the left doesn't want any audits or looking into as well. They like it the way it is because it works for them. So it's easier for them to destroy and smear people like us and call us conspiracy theorists when, yeah, nobody talks about that. Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi did a public press conference after the election that the election was hijacked. That was her exact words, Pelosi. And they wrote on that. And then it snowballed. But now, well, when it's clear as day, all the irregularities, no. We're conspiracy theorists. And the help of the press and big tech and government and other of these oligarchs who have control will do anything they can to deplatform, silence, or delete anyone who wants to say the election was stolen.
Absolutely.
It's just disgusting. We just want everyone's vote to count, legal votes to count. And until we fix this problem and get down to the bottom of some of these irregularities or all of them, a lot of people out there aren't going to have any faith in our election system. Like in Georgia, when they did the runoff, so many Republicans stayed home because they were upset and they felt that their vote wasn't going to count. And, you know, well, I think their votes would have counted if they came out. People can't think like that. When I hear that, I say, listen, Republicans, conservatives, independents who vote Republican, you have to get out and vote no matter the election. So it makes it harder for anyone to cheat. You have to break the system.
I tell people all the time, never leave the battlefield. No, you always have to stay and fight, regardless. Stay and fight. Don't ever throw your hands up and say, the hell with it. Never, ever, ever leave the battlefield.
And that's for anything. Obviously, you know that firsthand. But, you know, election integrity is one. Then we have, you know, the hot topic we know is Afghanistan and what went on. I mean, Blinken, the Secretary of State, he's in the middle of sit down with Congress testifying, which I doubt he's going to get many, many, many hardball questions. But now we're taking focus again because everything's a distraction in politics, especially with the left. We have the southern border. We have the southern border that has been wide open since January 20th. Okay, and I talking to Border Patrol agents who give real numbers, and I know you've talked to them as well. The numbers are some of the numbers aren't even being reported, and it's unbelievable when they say the 30% of people that are coming over aren't tested for COVID, or some of them are testing positive, and we don't have any security measures. The wall is stopped being built. Joe Biden has strengthened the economy for drug cartels, for human traffickers. They're overwhelming the Border Patrol. What is going on? How can anybody, Democrat, Republican, whatever they are, not see the problem here? of bringing and voters, forget about politicians, just the American people. They this is great. We're bringing all these people in because they're fleeing a worse place to live. It's the law, and then it's a rhetorical question because we have the Democrats who are loving this because it's the largest Democrat voting registration drive in modern U.S. history. That's what I see the southern border as. That's what I see it as. And it's, what do we do, Teddy? What do we do?
We got to lock it down. We need to lock the border down. We need an immigration moratorium and just lock it down. And I hear people saying, you know, we need serious immigration reform. We don't need any reform. Lock it down.
Lock it
and
down.
People come through legally. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. End the chain migration. End it all. Lock it down. We're closed. We're closed for freaking repairs right now.
Well, according to the Biden administration, the border is closed. According to the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mayorkas, the border is closed.
It ain't closed. It needs to be locked down.
It's such a crock of shit. And the amount of illegal drugs that are coming through, that's, you know, from China, going down to Central America, then coming through our border, the illegal guns. They don't care about illegal guns. That's another thing. They want to come after all of our
legally owned guns. And you know what? Let me touch on that real quick, too.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to get fired up.
Get fired up, Teddy. Let's do it.
We just gave $85 billion of the most sophisticated weaponry on the face of the earth to our sworn enemies in the Middle East.
Yep.
I don't want to hear another freaking word about gun control, how they want to come take my guns. No, you just gave them to the guys that I was over there fighting. You're not going to come take mine. It's, again, you say hypocrite. Yeah, that's a word that's way overused with these people.
It's criminal. It's criminal.
It is. It's treasonous is what it is.
You're 85 million dollars. I mean, Blackhawks. And what's great. Oh, so I had this conversation with somebody who, you know, leans a lot lefter than I do and goes, well, you know, they decommissioned a lot of that stuff. There's a lot of things there that don't work. And then I showed them something. I said, oh, yeah, well, look at this. Oh, what's this? They put all of the decommissioned Humvees, whether it's tanks, possibly some aircraft, and they put them on flatbeds. And they brought them to Iran. Iran is fixing them and repairing them.
They're going to reverse engineer everything.
Reverse engineer, but they're making them operable. They're re-weaponizing them. The reverse engineering is going to be ridiculous. Wait till China. They probably already have it.
Yep.
Russia, they probably already have it. We're talking drone technology, everything. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, you walk into a gun store, Teddy, and you buy a new handgun, and it comes in a nice blue or black handgun case. They left brand new pistols.
I know.
When you see the Taliban walking around in U.S. military uniforms in a U.S. military Humvee patrolling the streets of Kabul,
yeah,
that is beyond any sick movie you could see.
I am surprised that Joe Biden actually had the courage to show his face anywhere on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Oh. He's empowered them. He has made them stronger. And as we're here remembering the 20th anniversary of 9/11, the Taliban was celebrating it inside our U.S. embassy in Kabul.
Yeah.
Think about that. You know, I think about all of the young men and women who were killed, wounded in the past 20 years fighting over there. For what? For what? For Joe Biden to just say, you know what? We're just going to give it all back to him. We're out. We're done. We're rolling.
Dude, you know, 20 years ago, we went there because they attacked us. And the history of that can go a bunch of different ways, whatever it is. And 20 years later, we, like you said, we just said, hey, we're going to give back control of the place that we went and took control. And you know, the whole that's a whole other discussion that people can have about the were we there too long, and you know, probably, yeah, should we have nation built? Maybe not. Me personally, my opinion is we should have went there 20 years ago, carpet bombed the hell out of them, did what we had to do to eliminate Al-Qaeda and everything else, which was done, and come home and be done with it.
There was no exit plan. There was no exit strategy. Even the top generals and advisors.
Yeah.
They all concur. There was no clear exit plan or exit strategy. And I can tell you this. When I'm in Congress, I will never, ever, ever cast a vote to send this nation's young men and women into harm's way unless, number one, it's an absolute last resort, and number two, there is a very clear win and go home policy.
Yeah.
Like, I want strategy, I want timelines, and I want a withdrawal date. Go complete the mission and come home. Not this 20-year stuff that just happened.
And I'll tell you, I like that, because what I also like, being that you're a veteran, you served, the amount of veterans we from all aspects of the military that we currently have in Congress and that are seeking seats, I think that brings a lot to the table,
mm-hmm,
in Congress with these swamp career politicians that don't know their ass from their elbow when it comes to anything about what the military does, other than what they hear from the upper echelons. But we need people like you. Like I look at another candidate. He's endorsed by Kim Klasick. He's in Arizona. Alex Stovall.
Mm-hmm.
He's a military chaplain. I had a conversation with him. He was on my show. And he, same thing, he wants to go to Congress to serve the American people. And people like him and like you, it's not easy too, because when you're in Congress, Teddy, you're a minority, even in the Republican Party. You are a minority. Yeah, you have the Freedom Caucus, which we need to get stronger. The America First. We need to send a message, a big message, to our Republican leadership. And obviously that has to come from aggressive members of Congress and aggressive candidates who are running for Congress. And just everything from what we do militarily to things that the federal government shouldn't even be involved in, like mask mandates, mm-hmm, and mandates about putting medication in your arms. And this is a war on, to me, it's a war on the American people.
You're absolutely right. It's a war on the American people.
It's dividing the American people now into a social status, us and them, the people that there is no just happy with making your choice and that's it. No. The people that they call the unvaccinated are now the ridiculed and evil people. Those are the people that are bad now. And it's crazy that the federal that the Biden administration, the Biden regime, has, I think, successfully now politicized and weaponized every federal agency. Now he's at the Board of Education. Now he's going to politicize and weaponize the Department of Labor and OSHA.
Yep.
To go after businesses with 100 or more employees. I mean, this is not American.
Hey, you know what? Those are all the people who wanted big government. You know, that this is the party who says, we know better than you how to run your life. And you know what? Where are the Republicans?
Yeah.
Where are they? Why are they not calling for impeachment on a daily basis? Why are they not fighting back and pushing back on a daily basis? Because it's easy for them to sit back and say right now, well, we don't have the majority. You know what? I don't care. Stand up, fight, do everything in your power to block every single move that this dictator does. So what, you're sitting down there now for 2 years not doing a damn thing because you're not in the majority? And when we did have the majority, they didn't do a damn thing.
That's the problem. And that's the problem with the swamp, and that's the problem with the GOP. That's the problem with the Republicans now that do not have spines. And that
you said it earlier, and you just said it again, right here. They don't have a freaking backbone. They don't have one.
No, they don't. Apparently, you have two, and that's great.
You know what's funny? My little guy says, "Daddy, where'd you get that from?" He goes, "Did you take it from a bad guy?" And I go, "Yes, son, I did."
Yeah, he was really bad. Now I'm bringing it to Congress.
When
with
I tell
me.
Him to go to bed at night, he listens.
Hey, listen. If you told me to go to bed at night, I'd listen, Teddy. You know, but you have, and I know in your, I saw on your social media that you're standing up to the schools with the mask mandates. You know, all summer, especially where I am, everybody's out having a good time, sporting events, barbecues, the bars, the restaurants, everything's packed. And then all of a sudden it's, well, the time for the kids to go back to school. So we're going to put diapers on all their faces and we don't care what anybody says.
Teachers unions.
The teachers unions. Exactly. And it's really, so there's some school districts that actually, maybe only one or two in my area, that have stepped up as a school board and said, you know what? We're going to file suit and sue the Department of Education or the Department of Health and the governor. And I want to see that more. But unfortunately, the Board of Ed, the elected Board of Education, especially my area, that they're empty suits. They're empty suits. And we've had a couple of rallies in my neighborhood. We're having a couple more because all we want, we're not telling anybody to ban masks. All we want is the choice. I refuse to co-parent with the government. I will not co-parent with the government. I will not co-parent with the school. And I got criticized because I withdrew my daughter and she's in a homeschool cooperative, which is unbelievable. See, I can't do it. I can't allow that to happen, but doesn't mean I'm going to give up the fight. I'm still going to fight with the parents who don't have the luxury of doing that homeschooling or paying for a homeschool co-op. I'm still going to have a voice and do it. You know, I had news stations, interviewing me last week about it and other things. And I tell everybody out there, I'm sure you agree that these local elections are important. These Board of Education elections are important. You have to get people in there that actually want to fight for the kids and the parents that actually, and don't want to just cower to the state Board of Education because they're worried
people
about
scared,
well, the funding.
They're scared to stand up. And then what I'm finding is a lot of the parents that are pulling their kids out of school. Okay, they pull their kids out. Now they're out of the fight.
Right.
They still won't stand up and fight. Like, I fixed my situation.
No, it's not fixing. Like, pulling my daughter out is not something I wanted to do. I didn't, but I'm not going to allow my 9-year-old to go to chorus class and the chorus teacher on the first day of school ask her what her pronouns are. I'm not going to, the high school in my neighborhood, the second day of school in like ninth grade AP English showed a video. The title of the video was called White Privilege. And all of that, you can't walk in the school without having your mask on your face.
Brother, we've become such a soft nation and a soft society. Okay. My father was a brick and stone mason. Okay. I grew up on job sites. He made sure my summer jobs, I learned a little bit about everything. I worked roofing crews, framing crews. I worked at a block yard loading flatbed trucks with cinder blocks. That's where I got my education. from all those guys that I worked with when I was a kid. And let me tell you, we've become so soft. This generation after us couldn't fight their way out of a wet paper bag because their feelings are hurt. Okay, I had a football coach who was a Vietnam veteran. He was in the Marine Corps. And I'll never forget, he used to grab our face mask and he always had a big chew in. And he'd yell and scream at you and tobacco particles be flying all up in your face. And then as you're down in your stance, he'd come up behind you and kick you in the ass and have no problem. Like, he would run us till we threw up. Could you imagine today? Could you imagine? Okay. We need to toughen this society up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because everybody now is in submission mode. Everybody, you know, they don't want to hurt each other's feelings. You know? You can't hurt everybody's feelings.
No,
point.
Me neither.
I've been called everything under the sun that you could be called. You can't hurt my feelings. I've been through hell and back. Nothing you can say to me can hurt me.
It's time for it's time for those people, those soft, those woke, those sick anti-American socialists out there. It's time for their feelings to get hurt. Mm-hmm. And it is time for people who truly love America, like yourself, to step up and get into the fight and get involved. And don't just sit there and watch TV. Do something. Everybody has a voice. Yeah, everybody has to find their voice and just do something. Whether it's get involved in supporting a local candidate who you know has that that America First attitude, that
Absolutely.
We're here for Americans like yourself. Like you're I hope and pray, Teddy, that you are victorious in this election.
You
I'm not
will
even
be,
in
Pennsylvania,
and I'm
will
sure
be.
You will. Like I'm not in Pennsylvania, and I need you in Congress. And that's I tell people whether no matter what state you're in, you got to pay attention out there. Yeah, you have to look at the big picture. We need that majority. Where I am, it's just a disgusting blue swamp, and that's why I personally look around like you in Pennsylvania, Alex Stovall in Arizona, and other people in other places, and it's just important so that when you're all in Congress, you're working for the constituents in your district, absolutely, but you're working for
I'm working
people.
For the American people.
Yes,
and here's the thing, brother. You know, I get. Let me tell you, my small dollar donations are off the freaking chart. And when they come in, you know, they list their occupation, you know, pipe fitters, welders, union carpenters, steel workers, contractors. Okay. Like these are the people in this country who feel like they don't have a voice right now.
Right.
They just don't, you know, these guys in these $5,000 suits don't represent them. They represent themselves and their special interests.
And yeah, and that's the whole problem with these mega money packs and these lobbyists.
You know, we're going to get it done, but we're going to get it done in volume with the small dollar donations. That's what's going to do it for us.
And speaking of donations and everything, where can everybody watching or listening find information about you, Teddy Daniels, who's running for Congress? It's the 8th Congressional District in Pennsylvania, correct?
Yes.
Where can everybody find you?
They can go to TeddyDanielsPA.com. Teddy like the bear, Daniels like the whiskey, and PA the state. TeddyDanielsPA.com.
That's good. Awesome. And everyone can go there. They can donate. And no matter where anybody's from.
They can
from,
read anything they want to read about me.
Right. And you're also a candidate that has, and I love this too. You have a firm belief in term limits in Congress too.
Absolutely.
Am I right?
Absolutely. Brother, we wouldn't be where we are today if we had term limits. These people would have been voted out years ago. Yeah. They would have stepped down. They're like, oh, my term's up.
Yeah, it's true. For everybody out there.
And here's the problem with the way that it's set up now. All these politicians are so concerned about their next election that they want to toe the line. They don't actually want to make a decision that could possibly cost them an election. If there's term limits, okay, you know what? At least maybe their last term, we would get some solid votes out of people.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah, the party wants me to go this way, but it would negatively affect the people in my district if I did go that way. So I'm not going to go that way. I'm going to step out and I'm going to do the right thing. You know, we would have more of that with term limits.
You know, it's funny when you say not voting the party. If you look at quick Senator Manchin out of Virginia, he's like I call him the Democrat that could possibly save America because
well,
he turns
don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Manchin's still as progressive as they come.
Yeah.
But he knows in West Virginia, in order for him to, you know, keep his seat.
Yeah.
He better vote a certain way.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it kind of keeps him in check. And obviously the Democrats are not happy with him, especially with him saying publicly that he's not for this $3.5 trillion, spending spree to add, just add to the debt. But listen, Teddy, first of all, thank you for your service to this country. And that's both militarily and in the law enforcement. You're to me, the epitome of America. I can't thank you enough. I hope one day to have the opportunity to shake your hand.
I'll have you down to D.C., brother.
With bells on, I will be there, my friend. And everyone out there, check out Teddy Daniels. He true American patriot. We need him in Congress. All those in Pennsylvania, please make sure you get out there, knock on some doors, get people out there to vote for him. TeddyDanielsPA.com. Teddy, again, thank you, and best of luck with your campaign. Don't go away right after. And just again, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on, brother. This was fun, man. I really appreciate
it. All right, everybody out there, check out the rest of the episodes over at the Great Divide 1776.com. You can get all the episodes there. Stay tuned and you'll see some more video about Teddy Daniels. And of course, make sure you take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and most of all, God bless America. You take care. You can reach out to me with opinions and ideas for other episodes at TheGreatDivide1776@gmail.com. You can also find me on social media at The Great Divide Podcast. And please be sure to leave a review for this podcast so the show can be shared to other listeners. Thank you, and God bless America.